Be here. I'm grateful to all of you for coming. How may I help?
Bartholomew, we were wondering if you would speak to us on the topic of learning to live the intuitive life.
Oh, well, I'm pleased that this has come up at this time because there are several, I think, that could directly benefit from this at this time. There are many ways that you can live your life, as you all are well aware of. Some bring you greater satisfaction than others. I feel that those of you who consider yourself to be what we call serious seekers, which is a strange word, because if you're seriously seeking, you shouldn't be very serious. You should have a lot of joy in your life. But one who considers themselves a serious seeker should give great thought to how to use each moment of one's day, because if not, victory is rarely achieved in spasmodic bursts. And I think most of the problems with those who seek to come to realization is that they are too spasmodic. They spend weeks even in intensive training, and they go to great ashrams, and they do great satsangs, and they do great meditations, and so on. And then they go back to their life, and within a few weeks, all of that energy has dissipated. They are back to the same problems. Their mind is still caught in the ritual of their prison, and they have not freed themselves from the limitations of their mind. I'm not against such intensive moments. That's entirely one's own personal choice. Sometimes they're extremely beneficial. There are no rules to this. I simply feel that to make maximum use of the lifespan that you've chosen to live, it is best to use it in a moment-to-moment awareness so that you will come to victory much sooner. So the intuitive life is the best tool that I can think of. Now, I will state frankly, and this is not a rule, but it is a strong inclination that I have. I can put it this way. I feel that meditation is important, and I would like to explain why. There's nothing magic in meditation, nothing. In fact, many people meditate, and all they do is feel very self-satisfied and full of pleasure at their own wonderful abilities to meditate, and I am not terribly in favor of this kind of thing. But what is exciting about the meditative state is that you will finally begin to believe all of the things that you have read. If you are meditating with any degree of ability, you will soon come in touch with what we're talking about. You know, the presence will be so empowered around you that you will have to, in spite of all of your ego's obstacles, say, ah, oh, it's true. There is such a thing as divine energy, and I feel it. I feel it here and now in me, and isn't that something? And when you really touch that power, I want to say that a hallmark of real God power is not a feeling of arrogance in your heart, but a feeling of absolute humility. When you get up from your meditation and the tears are running down your face and you think, my God, it's true, you have touched what I consider to be divine power. There are many powers at work in the universe, my friends. I would not say that if you begin to feel power that you are somehow in touch with divine power. Do you understand? There's the power of the mind that is very full of facets, glimmering diamond-like facets, which is the power of the mind. There's the power of the emotional body, which gives rise to... This is a phenomenon often seen in born-again churches, if you will. That is a definite power, and it's an emotional power, and it rises up, and it fills you with a certain beautiful joy and energy and so on. And this is another power. Then there is the power of the occult, which comes in that gives you a lot of the manifestations of the phenomenology and so on, and things rise and fall, and you see this and you see that. And all of those are powers, and I do not for a moment deny that they exist. I simply say that when you really wish to tap into the source that transcends all of those powers, that has within it the embodiment of the real truth and the light that you seek, you will know it, and you will know it because of not because you feel so glamorous about it, not because you rush out to tell your friends, oh my, look what I experienced today. You know, when that is not present, when you simply sit there after the completion of a deep meditation and your heart is just so filled with the gratitude of what you now seek and now sense within you, when the tears are on your face and the joy rises in your heart, when that kind of a state is present, then know that you are becoming in tune with the real reality of the divine presence. It doesn't carry with it ever any sense of glorified self. And no, it isn't anything that you would seek to share with anyone, because somehow when you begin to experience that, you know exactly that they also contain it. Do you see? There's no need to talk with it to anyone, because one of the hallmarks is that you know it isn't yours. It is not yours. You cannot say, oh, look what I have achieved. What you can only say is, look what we all have as a capability. Isn't it amazing? And when that type of feeling imbues your mind and your heart, when the gratitude is the one thing that centers in your consciousness, then you will begin to know. Now, some of you will be and have been in touch with what I would call higher forms of energy, which means the so-called entities, the lords of the universe, the Lord Maitreya, so on, the Lord Buddha, the Jesus, the Christ, and so on. Now, these are all, some of you will be and have been in touch with some of these energies that personify, that come out in a personification, which I mean they will take on some kind of a visual form. And this is not to say that that is not the highest form of energy. It simply is that for certain people's development, that is exactly what's needful. If you trust the process, if you trust life, my friends, you will find that you will become very much in touch with those energies that are yours to understand and to appreciate, and that it's simply a matter of moving with them in understanding. I would ask you to trust the process. Whatever is happening, please trust it, because certain things are very needful. Now, when you come to the intuitive life, you begin at maximum with your meditations. I feel this is important. If this is not something you can do easily, then don't do it. I find that those of you that push very hard against meditation, it's almost best to leave it alone. Because as you push against it, then a resistance takes place, a friction comes in to mind, and you become very adverse to the thoughts of it. And I do not recommend, contrary to many people's beliefs, I do not believe that you should then force yourself to sit in a posture and go through it all. I would simply say that I would wage everything I know on the following fact. If you put that aside and begin to live your life daily in an intuitive form, one morning you will find yourself thinking, I think I will sit in meditation. Do you see? When you force yourself, when you push yourself, it is as if you are in a battle. And the divine will never come in such cases. The divine does not wish to battle. There is no such thing as a battle for the divine energy. It simply waits for the rightness of mind and heart, and then it fills itself in its own way. So my first statement is, if you are adverse to meditation, then don't do it. Simply don't do it. If you find the yearning within you to do it, then do it in whatever way, shape, or form comes to you. If you wish specialized guidance in meditation, if you have any belief at all in what we're doing, then fine, I will be willing to help you. If not, fine. Find something else. But always, please, when your heart starts to speak to you and wants to be set down in a definite form, find a way to do it. Will you please seek out all of your avenues in your life and find some form of awareness that responds to your being, and go with it. Do it. All I can say again.
And then again is, please do it. I don't care what it is you do, do it. You see, all of them will work if you do it. None of them will work if you don't. It's simply a matter of doing.
What responds within your being? But then how about the daily life? All right. I will come in at maximum, which is what I would like to put out as what I consider to be the highest way to live your daily round and fit yourself in wherever you do. The intuitive life is one that is lived within and not within the mind. And it's very simple, but it's very difficult. Because, for example, your day begins and you have already made up your mind what you're going to eat in the morning, let us say. All right? This is based on what? Past memory, past desire, past. Everything is in the past. All right, now, you are not so attuned, I doubt, well, maybe some of you are, but it's very doubtful that many of you are very attuned with the movements of your own body, so much to know what you should eat and what you should not eat on a given moment. And there are different needs, my friends, in a different moment. If things are beginning to build in your body for deep awareness, then your food must change. But if your mind is so deciding ahead of time what it is your body needs, then you simply will not... You will not change. You will just go on in your daily round just like an animal goes to its dish and eats its food because somebody's placed it there. So the intuitive person begins at the very moment of beginning, after the meditation or before if that's not your interest. And as you move into the breakfast section of your life, think about it. Deeply go in. I shouldn't even use the word think because you're going to take the wrong apparatus here. Go within yourself and find out what is it. You know, the process can be trusted. If you begin to be intuitive, the body will tell you what it wants to eat. Does it want to eat at all? some moments, you know, your mind will say, oh my, it's time to eat breakfast. And your body's saying, but you don't need to eat breakfast. You know, get in there. Get in there. Get a relationship with what's going on. And find out. Present yourself with the situation. What is really needful here? Get in touch with all of the energies moving through your body, please. That's where you've got to start. This is the beginning of the workshop experiment, right here. And the mind isn't going to help you because it's based on memory, desire, past patterns, most of which are irrelevant to what's happening to you now. Because if you're doing your homework, things are going to start to change. In the terminology of the day, your consciousness is going to begin to expand, and certain foods are going to be necessary and some are not. There are no rules. People say, should I eat meat? I don't know. Should I drink wine? I don't know. Should I eat health foods? I don't know. It doesn't, you see, there are no rules. I can't just say blanketly, thou shalt do. There isn't any such thing, because each one of you is in a different harmony with a different state of awareness. There are certain obvious rules. It is better to eat natural foods than unnatural foods. That's a rule, all right? But many people who eat only unnatural foods have come to great states of consciousness. You see, there isn't any rule to be applied in any way. But the thing that I would ask that you become your own workshop. Find out what your own body is saying and what it needs. All right. So the breakfast situation goes on in its own round of understanding. And then each moment of your day, the intuitive life speaks to you. Let us say you drive a car. And if you are paying good attention, you will find that you probably go the same way every day. Most people get in their car, they turn it on, and they go. All right? Now that's one way to live your life. I would suggest, if you want a little more intuition incorporated in your life, that you not do that. Because I will tell you very clearly that if there are adverse circumstances on certain corners of that road that you usually take, and if you really have put yourself in the flow and want some kind of so-called protection, you will be protected by guidance, because it'll simply say, don't go that way today. And it's not so bad for you anyway to loosen your life up a bit, is it? And go a different route and go a different road and see a few different houses and the different trees. You know, what I'm saying is please begin to participate in your life in its fullness. Because you are missing so much when you go down the same roads every day. Not only mental roads, but physical roads. It's just the sameness. Your breakfast is the same. Your road to work is the same. And now when you get to your job, aha, this is where everything is often very much the same. By that I mean that when you left work the day before, perhaps you had an altercation with someone. All right? Now you walk in the next morning, what's on your mind? What happened at 4 o'clock the afternoon before? That is in your mind. That is now a piece of your data. And the intuitive person doesn't live like that. The intuitive person has dropped it. As it happened, dropped it. Made a conscious effort to say, that's that, it's finished, complete. Certain intuitions are in my body now, in my mind, in my whole being, of how to respond better to this person. But it's finished. You don't take it home and worry it and think about it. And, you know, that will go into the evening later. But that is not a helpful way to live your life. But as you walk in the door, pay attention. What are your thought forms about these people? Are they based on that old pattern? Are they? Probably. So now, please, allow the breeze of freedom to move through you. And as you walk in the door, it's a new moment, my friends. Every moment is ever new. And what that means is that person has gone home, had certain interchanges with certain people, probably the same amount of remorse touched with anxiety and anger that you have had and so on. You know, you're not separate from each other. So there has been a process. And the night has taken on a different hue and tone. But when you present yourself there in the morning, the intuitive person is totally open. The intuitive person has put aside all of that. All of what's come before, and the moment is ever new. And in that moment of the energies relating between you and that person and the whole circumstance that you now have before you is an exciting moment. Life lived intuitively is an exciting thing because you never know what's happening because you're not playing it from the past. Do you understand that the memory and the desires that you have created and the patterns that have churned you through that moment can be dropped? They can be dropped. And if you want to live an exciting life, that's what I suggest to you. Move into that intuitive response and begin it. As you walk in the door, it's a new person. It is a new person. You see them in the same form. They may even have the same uniform. You know, I see several of you have uniforms in your consciousness, you know, that you have to. So there's another blockage because they don't have on a green dress or a blue dress. It's the same. Newness of life is available right then. To those of you that are married, I would ask you to pay close attention to this. The man or woman that goes out the door in the morning is not the same that comes in the afternoon. It is not the same. An entire world of change has taken place. But if you were in the old pattern, those of you with children, It's the same process. They aren't the same as they come in the door. A world of environmental change has taken place. They are not the same. But if you're not paying attention, if you're just living a ritual life of going through the motions, they'll walk in the door and you'll remember that they didn't put away their socks, or you'll remember whatever it is that you they didn't like your coffee, or whatever the situation. And lo and behold, you're not responding. You're not living the moment. You're living the morning. You're living the night before. Do you see? Free it up, my friends. If you really want to live an exciting life, free it up. And that's how to do it. How do you do it? It's very simple. You simply open yourself. If you were paying attention, you'll see that much of life is spent like this. I may use the symbology of clasping around your heart center. And of course, this is very symbolic because in the heart, we associate emotional pain with the heart. And so we close ourselves up. And if you could see yourself in a so-called psychic form, this is how many of you live your lives. You know, your shoulders are bent and your arms are over your heart center and you're walking through life like this. Well, it's true that you might protect yourself from some amount of pain, not a whole lot, but some. But I also sense, is this lady coming here? So, back to the intuitive life. Most of you live your lives in this type of a formation, and I would say that perhaps some of the aches and pains you might have been able to avoid, but I really doubt it very seriously, because that isn't really where pain begins. It begins in the mind and so on. We've spoken of that before. However, I would like to suggest to you that as a symbol in your own mind, instead of seeing yourself thusly, I would see yourself thus. And it's an entirely different stance to face the world with, you see? Because life is going to deal you your hand anyway. Life is going to deal you your cards. You know, you're not going to get out of it. All of you share the same condition. You're humans, and that is a very beautiful thing to be, and it's a very wonderful thing to share. And you must not ever fall into the trap of wanting to be so special a human that you do not have to pay your dues in terms of pain, sorrow, anxiety, and so on. It is the human condition, and I think that more and more as you move into the intuitive life, you will rejoice that you were able to participate in that part of the drama. But it is a more sophisticated level, I will assure you. At the beginning, one is very protected, and then one realizes that, after all, it is the human condition. All humans suffer. And as you open your hearts, you see, the symbol is very easily observed, that the heart opens and the hands are open, and then whatever comes is received. You know, when you are like this, you're not being able to receive. The problem with not being able to receive when you do thusly is that you've cut yourself off, not only perhaps from some amount of anxiety, but you certainly have cut yourself off from the light. Because you see, when you're closed in like this, you're saying no, no. But you keep everything away. You understand you're either open to all that life has for you, or you are closed. And if you're closed, then life has to move through you and around you in some kind of a contorted fashion. I know these are metaphors, but I would simply say that if you could change your own perception of how you wish to live your life, when you walk into that room and that person is there that you've had your difficulties with, think of the difference, and think of their confusion and ultimate delight at the fact that what had been a difficult situation this morning is an open-hearted and open-handed situation, and nothing but acceptance is there for whatever is there. You know, you don't have to be afraid of life. You don't have to be afraid of life. This is one of the main difficulties. You do not have to be afraid of life. You are never, ever handed anything that you cannot handle, ever. But it is that fear of not being able to handle it, is that fear of the other shoe dropping in your life that always terrifies you into wanting to become protected and therefore isolated. And what you do simply is isolate yourself to such an extent that you cannot give and you cannot receive. And that is a very boring kind of a life. It may be, in your mind, safe. I don't know if it really is safe. But your mind might say, I'm safe. I tell you, safety is pointless. Safety is boring. What you really want is a creative, exciting, dynamic life, because that's what you came for. So participate in that, and you will not participate dynamically if you are afraid. How can you? Someone who is fearful is not creative and dynamic and outgoing and outreaching, because they're always protecting themselves. So the best way is to just move into the moment and say, whatever, whatever. Most of your fears are future fears that never happen. When they do happen, lo and behold, you have the ability, you have the capacity, you have the awareness to handle it. It's simply the fear that has kept you in your tomb of anxiety and worry. When the moment presents itself, you can do it, and you do it. And you each say to the other, isn't that amazing what so-and-so has been able to suffer and come through? Isn't that amazing? No, it isn't amazing, because you do it. You do it all the time, but you're not paying attention. Because once you get through one anxiety, lo and behold, another one looms, and you begin to be afraid again. And you never sit down and say, my, didn't I do that well? My, didn't I have the courage? My, didn't I handle it with great foresight and great awareness? Isn't that amazing? You don't give yourself the credit. You're always worried about the next one. Do you understand? You're living your lives from anxiety to anxiety. Those of you who think you're not, I would ask you to observe very deeply your centers of awareness. What are you afraid of? What are you afraid of? Everyone is afraid. Everyone is afraid until one moment when they decide, let it happen. Let it happen. I have confidence that I have the ability and the courage and the awareness to handle anything. You know, you're not weak. You're not insignificant. You know, you are a part of the divine. And every moment that you think that you can't handle something is simply saying that the divine is a powerless entity, a powerless power, and that you are not capable. That isn't really the truth that needs to be reflected. All right, I think you're getting a feeling of what I mean by the intuitive life. And as you move through your daily round, watch how you respond to it. Watch how you respond at lunch. Watch how you respond at a table when somebody you don't like comes and sits down. Just watch yourself very carefully. What is your response to that? Is there another way to intuitively respond to that? You know, if you are all one, then there is, with anyone, no matter who they might be, there is a level of touching that you can communicate with. There is, because you are one. You are not isolated little, you know, bobbles of light moving through life in a isolated pattern. That is not what you are. And once you accept, even as a premise that you don't really believe yet, but the idea that somehow all of you are connected in some kind of way, then you must understand that if you are connected, then there is a form of communion possible. Now, maybe verbal communion is not possible. I understand that. Verbal patterns are deeply entrenched, and they bring up negative thoughts and so on. You are all familiar with what I'm saying. I don't ask that you go into a verbal altercation or even try on the verbal level to make these things a harmonious one. But that isn't the only area that you've got. That's only the minute, minuscule part of your awareness. I ask you to take it up. Take it up to the highest. When you get to the highest, it's where the one stands, and it's where you all are one, and you can move to that level. You know, many of the people are talking about alpha levels and all these different, you've got them all stratified now. I find that very interesting, that as soon as you found out there were higher states, then you had to put them in categories. You know, alpha level and so on. Now we all have names for them, but that's all right. If they work for you on that way, do them. But the fact is that there is only one level, and it is that level that has the truth and the awareness and the dynamic joy and courage that you're all looking for. As you're seating yourself in that table, this person sits down. Instead of moving with rote automaton motions into your old thought patterns, let's try something new. Lift it up. Take it to the highest, open it up, same position, and you just might find that there really is a level of communication that you can open up to. You just might find that. You know, a life lived with openness and openness of heart and mind is an exciting thing. A life lived in fear and trepidation and timidity is very boring. You know, you may be safe, but you're going to be bored. And there's really no need to be boring. You know, it's better to die than to live your life in boredom. I'm perhaps you don't agree. I won't go into that. But I think a bored, constricted, limited life is not terribly worth living. And I would ask you to really consider that. And since most of you will want to live, then I would say perhaps the choice is to open up and just live your life like that. All right, now the obvious, of course, is your way home. Do you take the same route? Do you have the same thought patterns? A car stops in front of you and doesn't start just when the light turns. What do you do? What happens to you then? If you're living the intuitive life, for one thing, you're not really paying, you're not just paying attention to the other vehicles in the light, because all around you, at each moment, is a newness. You know, things are happening always in your environment, and you're not in touch with them. So as you move into those situations, just watch your patterns. Watch what happens. What rises up in your mind? How indignant do you get that Joe Doakes in the car isn't moving quickly? Because after all, this moment isn't important. You've got to get home because you've got to put on the dinner, and you've got to go to the theater, or I don't know, whatever. That moment is utterly unimportant to you, only as an obstacle, because you've got to get through it. Get through it. Do you see what I'm saying? The intuitive life cannot be lived that way. I don't care if you never get to the theater. I don't care. What I do care about is take advantage of every moment and live it intuitively, and you will come alive in a way that you just don't understand yet. When you come alive in each moment, when that happens, and you can begin to laugh because you see yourself thinking, oh, you know, why isn't he going? And you begin to honk your horn, or if you're very constricted and not able, you won't even honk your horn, but you'll be thinking, oh, you know, it doesn't matter. The thoughts are what matter, and you'll hear them if you're paying attention. So your whole life can be watched with an intuitive eye, and each time that you see the limitations that you've put on them, open them up. It's so simple. People say to me, well, I want to be free in my life, but I don't know how. I say, oh, yes, you know how. Oh, yes, you do. It's simply you don't want to because you're spending your time isolating and protecting instead of opening and expanding. You know, you're afraid if you expand that you're going to get into trouble. You know, if you put out too much, think about the human condition. You're a little worried about this. You know, if you extend yourself a little too much, well, you know, you never know what's going to happen. You know, you might get into trouble. Other people might not appreciate it. You might get into areas that you don't know how to handle. Oh, nonsense. It's just a matter of your state of mind that keeps you constricted, and thereby everything in your environment is constricted. You know, you constrict yourself so utterly. Now, the last point I would like to make is, and in the evening, of course, it's obvious when those of you that are married, those of you that have children, be aware, ever new joy, ever new moment. Someone walks in the door, it is a new moment. Let us not condition it with our past. Let us be ready. And let us also be ready to see ourselves in a new moment, because you're new too. You know, you're not the same person that left in the morning. And so just be aware of this. But as you go into the sleep state, intuitive living is very important as far as what you do prior to your sleep. Because if you are making maximum use of your time allotted, you're going to use your sleep state too. Now this is in deeper water, I understand that. However, it is capable, you're all capable, if you really want to, of being deeply intuitive and meditative in your sleep as well as in your daily round. They do not need to be exclusive. You have separated them out very definitely that this is your life awake, and then the sleep situation is totally beyond your control, something you have nothing to do with, and whatever happens, happens. Well, the intuitive person comes to see that that is not the case. That there is a way to live in the sleep state that will greatly move you to clarity of mind and heart. So, those of you who have different formulas, some of you do mantra, some of you do prayer, some of you do meditation, some of you don't do anything. But even those of you who don't do anything, what is really needful is, before you go to sleep, please understand that that is just as important a moment of your life as any other moment. Indeed, in some cases, more important. Because where your mind is when you go to sleep, that is the so-called level that you're going to slip to after you've gone into your sleep state. So if you lay there in bed, which many humans do, and go over the day and think about all the things that have happened and, oh, what you should have done and what you didn't do and that was a mistake, and then, of course, other people make mistakes, so you think about those, and then you think about the next day and what your ritual is going to be, all right, there's nothing intuitive about that. That is just mind stuff. That is just the old swimming pool water going around and around and around, and you don't need to do that. What really is maximum for help in your sleep state is to, as you begin to go to sleep, make a determined reach for the vastness. Many of you are familiar, and those of you that are not, I speak in many terms of the vastness. And the vastness is that symbol that is closest to the timeless that you seek. And if you can just move into the vastness in whatever way is meaningful for you, to see the limitations dropping off and the vastness opening up, and you as a part of that vastness, vaster and vaster, ever reaching out, ever expanding, ever moving out in an outward movement, however that is meaningful for you, I would ask you to do it. And then hold that as deeply as you can until sleep descends. And when it happens, you will move into areas of vastness that you will be surprised at. But it is your effort that brings the victory. It isn't going to overtake you as some kind of a cosmic accident. You know, it's something that you're going to have to be dedicated to doing. But as you move into the sleep state, that is extremely helpful. I do not recommend going through your daily round in your mind before sleep. I know many people do. And that is, of course, up to you. If that appeals to you, by all means, go ahead. I simply feel that if you need to do that, perhaps a time before your sleep state is more advantageous, because it isn't of great help to go over your limitations and the limitations of others. You will arise, and the new day will present new limitations, and on and on and on. Limitations are the state of the ego in a constricted awareness, and we seek to break those up. Are there any questions?
Bartholomew, in addition to having other habits like what I eat for breakfast and which way I go to work, I have the habit of trying to think out and plan with my mind what I'm going to do. Somehow I suspect that might be in conflict with living intuitively.
Living intuitively, and you're absolutely right, but of course that's a big one. That's a big one, because most humans really do not believe me when I tell them that their life will unfold with great ease and beauty and harmony if they will allow each moment to speak to them. Because the first thing they say is, oh, well, what about my life insurance policy? I don't know why that is so, but that always comes up. Well, what about my life insurance policy? Don't I have to have life insurance? This is a strange thing. Fine, have life insurance policies, have medical payment plans. That's fine. Those are rather sophisticated endings that come at the end of the road, not here in the beginnings of the intuitive experience. But what you will find if you are paying close attention to your life is that you do plan it out in the day, don't you? I'm going to do thus and thus and thus and thus. This is the way you live, and you feel that this is an orderly life. Now, some of you are extremely orderly, and that kind of person has a little harder time participating in the intuitive life, because they feel that not only themselves but all those that they are responsible for need to have things on time and have things become. And I can see some of the women saying, well, if I don't plan to have dinner lunch at 12, then what happens if my spouse wants lunch at 12 and there's nothing there? Well, all right, I understand all of this, but please understand, you can trust the process. You can trust the process to speak to you in ways that are not going to throw your whole life a kilter. I don't suggest that you all begin throwing over your lunch hours and all of this thing. Things will happen in their own way, in their own rhythm, in their own harmony. But what is really needful is to start breaking down the planning of this is the way my whole day should go. That kind of planning, if you do it, go ahead and do it. But I assure you that the divine has a lot of trouble moving harmoniously and changing things for you if you've decided ahead of time just how it has to be. Do you understand what I'm saying? It's either your choice or theirs. You have to pick. You say that I'm going to go through these rituals, and I say go ahead and do it. But even as you're planning, if you are the kind of person that is capable of planning, but with a very tentative planning, you will end up being much more amiable to things that spring up. You know how intuitive your life is living, you are living your life, if the following kind of condition comes up. Let us say that everybody's ready to sit down to a meal, and you've got everything all planned. And unexpectedly, someone walks in the door. Aha. Now, what is it? How do we live this moment? What if these are people that are not really compatible with what you wish to do at this lunch? What are these people who are going to bring up subjects and talk about things that you're not really interested in? How then do you spontaneously move? How do you feel? What happens? What happens in your mind? Are you angry? Are you resentful? I mean, deeply go into this, because you are the one that can tell you how you're responding. And you will find over and over and over again,
you make your plans, something comes to disturb them, and how do you respond? What do you say? Well, usually, you try and put what you would call the best face on it, which means you will make do. But inside, you're just making do. You haven't opened, you're closed now. Somebody has violated your space. Someone has walked into your home, violated your space, and you are upset by it. And how do you...
This tells you a great deal about your own movements as far as the divine goes. Those who are really able to say with the real deepness of heart, well, fine, and just incorporate, open the heart, open, even open the lunch. No one will mind having a little less lunch. You know, that's not a very big problem. You know, probably most of you eat too much anyway, if I might be frank. And, you know, it's not a very large problem. So open up the lunch, have another table, another place set, and so on. In other words, watch what happens in your own mind as to how these things come in. How, if you have set up, this is another wonderful one, if you've set up an idea in your mind that you are going to have an evening of quietude, isolation, and peace, and you have a favorite book that you've just bought and you really want to read it. Do you understand this one, all of you? This is a very deep one. And all of a sudden, you've just gotten the dishes done, everything's fine, and you're just settling down, and the doorbell rings, and somebody comes in, and it's somebody you don't care very much for, etc. What happens now? What can you do? You have to be intuitively aware of all the spontaneous needs of the moment. I promise you there is a need for that person coming into your life. It isn't meaningless. If you want to make it meaningless, you can. You can make any event meaningless. But you see, you've got all these ideas. Some moments are meaningful and filled with meaningful people, and some are meaningless and filled with meaningless people. There aren't any such things as meaningless people. There aren't any. Each moment of communion with anyone can be maximally meaningful. Do you hear me? It can be maximally meaningful. Your isolation and your ideas of who you like and who you don't like are what put these meaningful and meaningless ideas in your mind. The fact is that if someone walks in the door or the phone rings and there is a voice, there is meaning. There is meaning. You may not understand it with your finite mind. Yes, I agree. But I would say to you, trust, please trust that there is a divine movement going on here in spite of all the obstacles of the ego's place in its way. And the divine would love to have that moment be open so that it can do what it wishes rather than you do what you wish. Do you understand? Are you sensing the difference in the feeling of the movements that I'm asking you to give consideration to? Lived on that level, lived with that amount of expanding, boundless energy, everything will happen in its own way. And those of you who think, well, I don't have enough energy, that's nonsense. Your ego will tell you that you're limited and have no energy, and I say, fools, don't be misled by those statements. There is boundless energy available. It's simply that your mind has told you that you can only have so much, and when you've gotten your dollop for the day, it ends, and you must fall into bed in a prone state and wake up the next morning, and you will have new energy. I say, nonsense. This isn't the way it is. You could go for 48, 52, 98 hours on boundless energy if your mind didn't tell you that you couldn't. You are fed by forces that you have no ideas about. And this is silly. You limit. You limit. Your ritual is, it's time. The woman has this problem. Oh my, it's 9:30. It's time to go to bed. And she falls asleep. You best tell her this. No more energy. Time to go to sleep. Stop. And it's just the way she is. And she needs to loosen up on that. And I think she'll just have her work on that too. So these are the things that have to be done. These are the areas that have to be, you know, walked into with boldness. Boldness. The energy is there. It's always there. It isn't, you know, the Lord didn't say, you get 18 and 2/4 hours of energy today and then we're finished with you. You know, this is your mind that tells you, oh my, oh my. It is the same. Those of you who don't have access to food at certain times of the day, oh, you're hungry and therefore your mind gets fuzzy and you can't do this and you can't do that. Nonsense. This is your own mind. You will be amazed at the things that you don't need if you simply allow the energy within to tell you what you need. Money is another thing. Everyone thinks they have a certain amount of money needs and so on. And actually, you have your life so constricted and so categorized that you do need it because you've bought all these things and you sign these papers, and therefore there is a need for a certain amount of energy to come in. What is it called? Bills. The bills come in, the credit card, yes, all these things. All right, all of these things have to be done, and then one must make out these pieces of paper in exchange for other pieces of paper, and so on. And this is all your concept of money, you see. You sign it, and you send them this paper, they give you this paper, and they say, well, we've made this exchange, and now everything's all right. And somehow, mysteriously, behind this all is a great green band of energy called money that controls all of this. This is nonsense. Utter nonsense. The limitation is there, and you limit yourselves every time. I've heard people say, well, I'm only allowed a certain amount of money this month. All right, what does that mean? That is an amazing statement to me. I imagine it means that you feel that you cannot do thus and so unless you have these little green pieces of paper and these little silver coins. I imagine that's what is meaningful. I assure you that if you continue to think that way, that is exactly what will happen for you. I will also tell you there's another way. There is another way, which is, if you have a legitimate need, if it's legitimate, I don't mean a new Ferrari or something. If that isn't your need, I'm speaking of a need that is important to you. And if you really have one, and if it is needful in all situations, there are other bands of energy you can call on that are not green. You know, this divine power helps you. It has access to data that you don't, and it is able to manipulate form. You know, the divine manipulates energy too. You're not the only ones who can manipulate energy. The divine is very good at it and is very generous when allowed to do so. But most of the time, you've made up your minds, I have to do it myself, Father. Okay? No, don't help me. I'd rather do it myself. Then do it yourself. But then, when the extremity comes and the need is there and you don't have it, then what happens? So you've got to open these up, my friends. Open them up. If you have a legitimate need, if you've looked carefully and concisely at your needs and decided that such and such a thing is needful and important in order for the right motive, that's very important, offer it up. It's not hard. Just say, I need it. Please help. And something happens. Something happens, not in any way you can think of, not in any way you even need to worry about. It will happen. You say to me, oh, yes, I know. I've read all the books, Findhorn. It happens at Findhorn, right? It does happen at Findhorn. And it can happen in Albuquerque. And it can happen in Taos. And it can happen in Socorro. It can happen anywhere you happen to be because you are a pinpoint of that divine energy and it is very happy, willing, and joyous to meet your needs. But they must be legitimate and the motive must be clear. You cannot just say, well, you know, it would be pointless and certainly a karmic mistake to just ask for things that are capricious and not really meaningful and necessary for your life. Are there any questions?
I'd like to ask a question of accidents. I know there are no accidents, but I seem to have had an accident with me. And I know there was a meaning to it, and it might be of interest to the whole group to understand why things happen to them. Is it because we're not paying attention and something is trying to reach us to tell us something? I ran into a tree and tagged up my ear.
All right. There are no rules. I must state that first. There are no rules, and there's no way that I can speak to this point that will cover all of the existence in your life. I will simply say there are certain reasons for events. One very obvious reason, and one that I don't like to speak on much because it's such a garbled subject, is the law of karma, which is simply another way of saying that which you have given out you need to receive. All right, that's one obvious operative law. We're speaking of the earth plane now. I'm just simply talking about manipulating the energies on the earth plane, how you set the game up and how then you must play it out. Understand, I've said this before and I say again, those of you who have not heard it, it is not the divine that has set up your games. You have set them up yourself. You have made up your rules and now you must follow. If you were living by divine law, these things would not happen. They would not be needful because there wouldn't be any lessons to learn because there would be no you to learn them. But you have set it up, so there is a you that must learn, and so there it goes, down the path. All right, but let us be clear. I'm not speaking from the highest now. I'm speaking from that energy level that you call the material world and the certain laws that manipulate that energy field. And one of the laws is karma, cause and effect. All right? So that is one. Another, of course, is that oftentimes it is needful. By your own volition, you have made a contract to do certain things in a lifetime. And certain reminders are placed certain ways around the around down your path. And if you have not met your own required needs, not those of some capricious God, but your own desires for a lifespan, if you have not met them, at certain times along there, reminders are placed. And oftentimes illness is the big reminder in this regard. But it can be other things. It can be loss of a beloved. It can be any kind of things. Anything that comes to remind you. Now, I'm not saying that your need then forces someone to die. That is a very unkind pattern. That isn't what I mean. I simply mean there are agreements made that will remind others and will also meet and merge with the needs of that entity. Say an entity needs to die. They need it for their own needs. If it happens to coincide with a need along the path for you, then it will be a mutual choice to have incarnated at this time and played out this ritual. Do you understand? And it's simply a reminder. It goes on to its own destiny, needful and meaningful and joyfully goes on to its destiny, and you then are given the lesson of reminding. It is a great mistake, my friends, a great mistake to think that what you need is going to in any way damage someone else. The divine never, ever acts thusly, ever. Do you understand me? If you are saying that a child is born to you and dies, and you then awaken to the need for light, it is a great mistake to think that you are in any way guilty for that having happened, because it was a mutual act of love and affection and mutual need that brought you together to have that experience. And at that time, the child is freed to go on its own willfully chosen, delightful, joyous journey, and has had the added joy of having helped a beloved to some kind of understanding. Are we clear? All right. So understand that it is a mistake, an absolute mistake, to think that your need has willed the death of anyone, ever. You are not capable of willing the death of anyone, anyone. You can will it with your mind. It will not happen. It will not happen. What kind of a capricious God is it that gives you this kind of power and thus gives you the karmic indebtedness? Do you know what your karmic indebtedness would be if you willfully caused and brought about the death of another human being? That isn't the kind of toys that people are given to play with. That is absolutely absurd. You know, people think, oh, I thought about the death, I thought about it, and it happened. Right, that's true, but they are not connected events. You thought about it, one event. It happened, another event. They are not connected. What connects them in your mind is your guilt. What connects them is the power of life and death over anyone, and be grateful that you do not. That is a burden you do not need to take on, and it would be entirely too much for your limitations. Just be grateful that it is so. That would be entirely too much of a burden for anyone to carry. But what builds these bridges is guilt. What builds these bridges is misunderstanding of your oneness and of your own limited power. Please understand, egos have limited power. They operate as in a bubble, and they reflect back their own egoness. You know, you all think that you have this other vast control over other people. I would say nonsense to you. I would say nonsense. That is only your own wish for power, for continuation, for eternal life, that makes you think that you have this great power. It is true, of course, that you are connected, and that what that body does affects this body and that body, but it's a willfully taken up spontaneous movement. It is, you know, you knew the ground rules when you came. It's not a great surprise to you on the deep levels. You know the ground rules. You operate on them every day. When you're tired of that, then we'll talk about getting out of that. In fact, there are many tapes, I think, that deal with that. Have I answered your question? It is simply that sometimes it's a karmic need, sometimes it is a necessity of a repayment. I do not think that, and also it's just simply lack of awareness. Things happen to you, you know, you bump your foot. This is not a cosmic moment. You know, you just bump your foot. And that's because you weren't opening your eyes. And so when you pay attention, you watch where you're going, and you don't bump your feet. Now, and then just take whatever comes. Do you see? This is the open life. The open life that pays attention, that is deeply in awareness, not in order to protect yourself, but in order to participate. You cannot participate in life if you're not paying attention, my friends. You go on automatic life. And many people live their whole life on automatic life. And they wake up and they're dead. And they have lived their whole life on automatic life. And that is a very boring way to live a life. So open it up. Go on. Own your own, you know, there's no automatic pilot that brings you any joy. The joy in driving in a car or in riding and driving in an airplane is not the automatic, but it's the movement of yourself, of your feeling of moving through it, of your feeling of the spatialness of it, of the joy of the upliftment, of the going through. And do you understand? That is the way life is lived at maximum, not on automatic, and that's the way most people live. You know, everything closes down, everything shuts up, and they just bulldoze their way through life, and they wake up, and they're dead, and it's finished, and it's been boring, nothing has happened, they haven't touched anyone, they haven't opened up, they haven't done anything, and they think, oh, that's over with. But the problem with the, well, that's over with, is there's another one down the road, and here we go again on automatic pilot. No, no. Wake up now. This is why I use over and over the statement, please wake up. Please wake up. Be aware of your life. It can be incredibly exciting. The most boring life can be absolutely exciting, depending on how you live it. You don't all have to go out and become adventurers and sail the seven seas. Nonsense. Excitement lies right now in the moment. Every time another person comes in your room, excitement is possible. Real joy, real sharing, real communion. It's all there. It's all up to you. How do you deal with it? Do you have everybody in categories? If you have categories, then your life is very boring, because then everybody's stuck in their category and they can't get out. It's very hard to get out of a category. It's hard for them and it's hard for you. This is why marriages are difficult. People get in categories. And then they don't allow you to get out of that. You become very impatient if they start wandering out of their category. You know, this is a threat to you. Oh, my goodness, they're moving out of this. Where am I going to put them? You know, they don't belong. Certain people have certain roles in your life, plunk, and you place them in them, and they better stay there. Because if they don't, then you're going to get angry, and you may even start threatening divorce and, oh, my, all these things. And it's only because they're oozing out of their category. Nobody likes to be in a category, but everybody likes putting other people in them. You see, this is the unfairness of the ego situation. Everybody wants everybody in order in their lives, but they want the freedom to do as they please. And this is where we get a little bit confused and life becomes fuzzy. Are there any other questions?
Well, how does that work if someone deliberately kills another person for profit, their own profit?
What do you mean, how does it work?
Well,
do you mean, will they be sorrowful? Do you mean that will they
contracted for them?
Oh yes. You mean is there an agreement between the death and the doer? Oh yes. Oh yes. But that doesn't relieve the fact that the doer of the deed has an indebtedness. Oh yes, there's always understand there, you know, the people that are killed have an equal involvement in that moment of time space. And this is a contraction. Life does not reach out and just strike you down capriciously. There is a writtenness in the dynamic blueprint of your
life. And not all events are written, but many are. And one of them is your death is a written event.
And how it happens and when it'll happen. There are certain events. I will say again, as I said,
Friday night. There are certain times under certain circumstances that the so-called law is waived. But we don't need to talk about that because there's nothing you could do.
That comes from another level of awareness. It moves in another need, in another form, in another space, and has nothing to do with you. There are times that so-called death sentences are revoked, all right, if you want to put it on the earth terminology. But that's really of no concern. What we're saying is, yes, there is a connectedness between the person that dies and the person that committed the deed, by all means. By all means. That it was no surprise. It was something needful, understood, and necessary for the one who is doing the dying. This is not to say that just because there is a contract now, then the person who committed it has no indebtedness. That would be a great mistake. A great mistake. Yes?
You may have discussed this before, but you haven't heard all of the tapes. But it's occurred to me to wonder, but I think you've already answered that it's not necessary. Have you suggested at any time that the way we sit, the way we attend to your talk, improves your energy level?
If I have people in the group who are uninterested, bored, or hostile, it can act as a dampening device. However, anyone who does the kind of work such as this takes us into awareness and is very understanding of that. Because how can you expect people to understand if they've never heard it before? There are certain hostilities, resentments, and areas of conflict that come up in their minds, and they put them forward, and of course I sense them. There's no question about that. Indifference is another thing, an indifferent person. Probably, you know, perhaps they're getting something, perhaps they're not. Everyone has a different need and a different time. But the best and the highest moments come when there is a group that has a real interest and is really attentive to what is happening. And then the energy field builds, and then the expansion happens, and things become much more lofty. Yes, there is a relatedness. Just as there is in your meditation, your degree of attention to what is happening has a great deal of effect on what happens to you. You know, someone who sits in meditation bored, thinking about tomorrow's grocery list, is the only thing you'll have is probably a much better lunch. But I really think that that's probably not what you're sitting there for. So if you can just keep everything in its own time and place and worry about your grocery list in the morning and just sit there with the attention needed for the moment and what you wish to do with that moment.
So as long as we attend properly, it doesn't matter about our posture.
You mean if you're sitting erect and so on?
Yeah, when our eyes are closed.
No, none of that matters. You see, it's a matter of attunement of your being. And some of you can sit there looking very, very bored and very unconcerned, and yet I sense deep understanding going in. Others sit there with their eyes open, and they're all like this and everything, and they're not hearing me. But it's just that their stance is such that they appear to be. You know, these are on the, and it doesn't matter, because whatever is theirs to hear, they'll hear, and the rest, they won't. And it simply doesn't matter, because there are other times and other places that things come into their own understanding. It's just a matter of presenting it. You know, if it feels like something that is understandable, something that you can welcome in any way, then please do so. If not, absolutely no worry about it. Go and find something that meets your need. There are so many needs, and they're all met. You just believe in that.
Would you suggest that we try to get all of the tapes from the beginning of your teaching for those of us who weren't in on the ground floor?
I would say that's entirely up to you. If what has gone before is of interest to you, I would say that would be an interesting thing to do. I don't think it matters at all. I think what matters is, those of you who have had personal instruction, you will start to learn all these things on your own, within your own mind. However, it does help oftentimes to hear some of the vaster things. I think it is helpful. One of the difficulties, of course, is that so much of what I say has gone before. For example, I need to talk about the vastness and all of these things because they are so vital to understanding my observations of the earth plane. And so if one hasn't had that background, then it is difficult for us to go on to higher things. This is why it would be exciting if there was a core group, at least, that could be grounded on all those early understandings so that we could move into higher areas. Do you understand? It's a matter of the background. We can build a momentum, a vortex that gets, which is, of course, what's happened down in Socorro. The vortex is very strong now because most of those people already know the background, and I can move into something higher because we have built the background. The basis is there. They know what I have asked them to do. They know the various exercises that I have suggested would be helpful. They have looked at time, space. They have looked at all of these things. So therefore, it's easier. So if there is a core group that is interested that would like to do that, that would be beneficial. That would be very beneficial. Otherwise, no. Whatever is spontaneous and right and seems how the movement should go is what should take place, whatever it is. I would like to deal with the window that we're discussing. This woman has very kindly stated that she will construct a stained glass window for the meditation center in the north. And there was a question of what should go into it. I would ask you to please, if you could, to use your own intuitive wisdom to pick out the clarity of colors. Clarity of color is very important, as you well know. You have a very good sense of clarity in color. I would ask you to use that to bring forth. It would be helpful if we could have the so-called seven major colors, the rays, so-called, very illusory and non-existent term, but nevertheless what we will use, of color to use them. As for the design, I would like, as in all things, I do not care if this window ever comes into being. What I do very much care is if you go within your own consciousness and there muss upon and mull over those symbols that are deeply meaningful to you in your own life and in connectedness with what you sense about what is about to take birth in that area. Your intuition will play its part here, and I would much prefer that you spend 5 years working on it and bringing out a completed beauty of your own awareness than to give you some stereotype that places it upon your consciousness. The sooner you do it, of course, the easier for the couple, of course. There's no question about that. But I hope you understand my thrust, that I want it to be a part of you. I want it to... You are strongly grounded in symbology, and you understand them. You have connectedness with the deeper symbols. So I'd ask that you mull them over in your mind. Make this, if you will, a part of your life, to come into awareness of those symbols that take form and life in your mind, and you will see that some of them will come forward. And if you hold them in your mind, they will either take light or they will fade. The ones that take light are the ones that I would suggest that you somehow incorporate in the workings. Do you understand? I would like to have you use it, if you will, as part of your growth, as part of your expansion. And I think then it will be a most exquisite window, no matter what it might appear to the eye. If it carries that intuitive vibrational attention, it will speak in ways that other things do not speak. You understand? And I am very grateful to you for your care and your concern. I think we have perhaps gone long enough, have we not? Is it time? Are there any questions? She seems to be losing. Yes.
Mm-hmm. What is our responsibility to others who seem dependent on us? How can you evaluate How much can we help others, and when should we look for?
Hmm. Again, I must state there are no absolutes. Did you raise your hand for a private reading? Yes, I think, yes. Well, never, in a general sense, can such a question be answered. I can give certain guidelines, and I will be glad to, but if you have a particular problem, if there is something that is meaningful to her, then we will speak privately. But I will speak in terms, it is a problem. The one thing about dependencies is that one never knows who's dependent on whom. You know, it's very hard to know where this stands, you know. One may think that they are the one that the other is leaning on, whereas in reality what is happening is that the energy is such that they are keeping the other one dependent because of some kind of a need within themselves to appear to themselves helpful and strong and courageous and sacrificing
and noble and all of these vast terms, which boil down to mean that you perhaps don't want to stand on your own, which means perhaps that you
have the courage to stand as a person and say, I will take on my own life as my own responsibility. Now, it can happen that the other person is leaning. Now, it can happen that the other is the one that is truly in a dependent state. And then the question arises, to what extent are you helping them by allowing them to lean, and to what extent are you not? Now, the main guideline always lies in understanding your own motive. I go again and again back to this theme because it is absolutely crucial that you understand. Your motive carries all. What actually happens is not as important as what your motive has been at the outset of the situation. When your motive is right, when your motive is straight and pure and direct, then things have a way of falling into pattern and you come aware of what's happening. And in that awareness of your own motive, you will see where the interwoven strands lie. Do you understand? If you take this seriously, this dependency seriously, take it within your mind, use yourself as your own laboratory of understanding of how to deal with it, you will if you're paying close attention and are being utterly honest within your own being, you will see strands of connectedness, and these strands represent either your need or the other person's need. And when you see that motive, you'll know, is it legitimate or not? You will know it. You will not be able to mislead yourself. Do you understand? That if you're paying attention with a mind that says, I want to know, so that I can remove all of that in my life that is unessential, that I can truly be a vehicle of service and not just a leaning tower, you know, if you really want to see that, you will see it. And you can see the strands of your own mind. For example, pay attention to what you think. Hold that person up in your mind. Very good exercise, very painful, but very good exercise for humans. Hold the person in your mind, right before your mind's eye. Hold them carefully in your mind. And then allow all your thought forms about that person to pour out. It's almost as if you put hose down a sewer. And you allow them to come up, and just allow them. Don't make any judgments on yourself. Don't say, oh, that's terrible, or oh, isn't that wonderful. You know, either of these are not necessary. What is necessary is attention, paying attention. Allow them to come up, and stay with it. Don't be deflected. Don't go off on a tangent. Stay with it. If you can't do it the first time, do it another time, and another time, and another time, until it flows clear. It's the same thing. You must flow clear of these. And as they flow out, you will see. Just allow that person to stand in your mind. They will change. You'll be amazed at the different inflections in their face. Sometimes they will appear to be awful and ugly, and then they will appear to be sad and sorrowful, and they'll appear to be capricious. Allow the play, because it's only two mind constructs that we're talking about. We're not talking about reality. We're talking about ideas. We're talking about the mind, ideas, beliefs. You're not seeing the person. You're seeing your thoughts about the person, which is quite different, absolutely quite different. So allow them to come up and just watch them. Stay with it steadily and allow it. At the end of that time, write them down, because the mind is very sneaky. Write them down, because as you write them down, you will be so grounded in what you really saw that you will not be able to fool yourself. Do you understand? It's easy to forget about all of these things and allow them to slip away. I would suggest that you not do that, that you stay perfectly centered and then write them down. You will see the strands. You will see how you want to see them. For example, if at the end of this time you have seen them only as a puning, whining little child needing help, then the chances are very good that you yourself have set this symbol up, you know, that you yourself have set up this relationship of need. If, on the other hand, you see other things present, the ability to do thus and so, some strengths and yet some weaknesses, if that is how you perceive it, then you understand that perhaps you are having a meaningful function. Do you understand that when you have given them the freedom to be strong and yet there still is a need, as you see them is how you're responding. And if you see them as strong and yet with a temporary weakness or with a weakness that is perhaps socially difficult, do you understand? There's all kinds of weaknesses. Then you can get a good glimmer within yourself of how you have set up this relationship and what is really at work enmeshed here. How do you really see them? Pay attention. I suggest also that anyone do this not just with the dependency, but any kind of relationship that is not harmonious. And don't deceive yourselves. Everyone in this room has disharmonious relationships, with the possible exception of Dr. Aiken. But it is the true fact that this is the case, that there are people that rise in your mind and there is a negative movement that comes in. All right? Be honest with yourselves, please. Don't gloss them over and pretend they aren't there. Be serious about it, because it is freeing yourself that you free them and you free the whole situation, and light moves in and everything explodes and it's a joyful time. So I would ask you to be serious about this, if you will, please. Take them seriously, get free of them, and get on your business. But be serious about it, because it is only your mind that reflects back and back and back all of this residue that you've built up over all these times. And it isn't any fun. You know, at the basis of it, it isn't any fun to have negative thoughts about people. It is a bore. I go back to that word because I see it on the earth plane. The main problem is boredom. Boredom. Wake up, you know, live, full, courageous, dynamic, exciting, unfolding, uplifting lives. It's possible. It's what you're here for. Are there any questions? I think perhaps her voice is... I would like to thank all of you.